Welcome to Political Rewind. It's Monday afternoon. We've got Democratic strategist and the new principal partner. The only partner? Do you have a... When I say the only... Is this your firm alone, or are you like got a team now, Theron?
No team. I can't afford a big team like Brian. So it's just little old me.
Paramount Consulting, Theron Johnson's new business. Of course, he's played major roles in a lot of Democratic campaigns, including Barack Obama's reelection campaign. He ran it down here in the Southeast. Brian Robinson is with us. He's a Republican strategist and it's always good to have you here on Monday afternoons, Brian.
Happy Monday, Bill.
And when we can get you and Theron together, we're especially
Brian's
happy.
Been here a lot lately, though. He's here almost every Monday.
Yeah, we like having him here. And Jim Galloway, of course.
It's appointment listening.
The political writer of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read his column on Thursdays and Sundays, and he's all over the Political Insider blog.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of people on vacation, so it's just me right now.
That's right. Greg Bluestein's off this week, isn't he?
He's a lot of people.
So, yeah. So a couple of quick headlines. One of them, state headline, Jim Galloway, you actually reported this. Ted Cruz has weighed in on the lieutenant governor's race, and he's made an endorsement, yeah?
Yeah, he's endorsed David Schaefer, who's kind of the front runner already. Schaefer is the Duluth Republican. He's a president pro tem of the Senate. That's the number two position there right now. And Cruz is, they share kind of a common audience with social conservatives. So that's good for Schaefer. Schaefer's also been in the Senate for 15 years, which kind of makes him vulnerable to kind of the insider argument.
And Cruz
may be a little bit of an inoculation against that.
So there's that. And then there's a couple stories out of the Trump cabinet which are interesting. CNN is reporting that Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State Tillerson, is, and I'll read you the headline, the lead. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is expressing growing frustration with the Trump administration and may be considering resigning from his role. Though the former CEO of ExxonMobil has said he would stay on as top U.S. diplomat until the end of the year, at least several anonymous sources told CNN over the weekend he might leave earlier than that. Well, guys, you can all weigh in whether this is an accurate report in terms of his real feelings or not. There's no question that Tillerson has found some frustrations in being Secretary of State.
Absolutely. I mean, he hadn't really been that visible. And I mean, it's been a lot of rumors coming out of the State Department for almost a month or so now that he's not been happy. And then to now have this sort of confirmed or unconfirmed report from unknown sources that he's thinking about leaving is definitely not a good thing for the Trump administration right now.
And one other note, and we'll take this one with a grain of salt, although it's being reported by a really strong news organization, Axios, says that Trump has told some folks that he may be considering replacing Jeff Sessions with his friend Rudolph Giuliani, who, of course, was kind of left in the cold once Trump won the election. He was initially thought to be perhaps a candidate for that job. It didn't happen. And, Brian, what's interesting about that news, and Axios says Trump often talks about things like this in terms of personnel and then doesn't do anything about it. But the president went on a major tweet storm last night and this morning about a variety of subjects. And one of the things he tweeted about was the Russia investigation. And here's the exact tweet. So why aren't the committees and investigators and, of course, our beleaguered attorney general looking into crooked Hillary's crimes and Russia relations? He dumped on him in the New York Times interview, and now he's calling him beleaguered.
You know, it's sort of like you don't want to be the guy who is most loyal, who takes the most bullets and arrows for Trump, because he's eventually going to shoot one of the bullets and arrows at you. Certainly no one went out and did more humiliating work for the president than Sean Spicer did. And, of course, we see where that got him. He was targeted by Trump really early on. And there was no one who's been more loyal, more out front for Trump than Jeff Sessions has been. And I'll tell you, Jeff Sessions is not exactly I am a Republican, but Jeff Sessions' policies as AG aren't really in line with me. His mandatory minimums are, we know they don't work, that they keep people in prison for way too long for crime that don't meet the punishment. And it's expensive for taxpayers. Also, Jeff Sessions was a longtime foe of Georgia in the water war, so I've got a little bit of a grudge with him on that as well. But the fact is, it is a really tough position to be in when you're out front for Trump, because he doesn't have your back.
Yeah. I mean, beleaguered means besieged.
Right.
I mean, that means
besieged
people
by the president.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Well, and the thing that's so interesting is if you go back and you look at the footage and you look at the tapes, I mean, during the confirmation hearings, even before people pointed out all these things that Brian just talked about, and let's not forget that Jeff Sessions is known for his racist comments and his resistance towards the civil rights movement. When Coretta Scott King actually wrote a letter asking for him not to be appointed judge back in the late 80s, early 90s. But the ultimate question is this, and one of the comments that was so interesting to me is when Donald Trump over the weekend, or I guess at the end of last week, stated that had he known that Jeff Sessions was going to recuse himself from the Russian investigation, he would have never appointed him or approved him to be attorney general. And, you know, there's a rule in politics, and Brian and I know this, and when you're advising a politician, it's always three simple things. You know, what did you know? When did you know it? And what did you do about it when you found out about it? And so I think Trump is very upset that either Jeff Sessions told him that he talked to the Russian ambassador and he thought he was not going to recuse himself, or maybe Jeff Sessions did not tell him that information and Donald Trump was surprised. But ultimately, this is a huge conflict of interest for the White House right now.
And you can see the wheels turning inside the president's head, because this is all about Robert Mueller. Mm-hmm. Robert Mueller has got an investigation that is now very clearly focused on Trump's business dealings and Manafort's business dealings and Jared Kushner's business dealings. And the key to stopping him is not Sessions, because he's recused himself, but the assistant attorney general, whose name I cannot pronounce right now.
I can say one thing that I thought about over the weekend is, we've seen since the middle of 2015, when Trump got into the race, that he is a master manipulator of the media narrative. If there's going to be a bad story that comes out, he will tweet something that is candy for the media and will completely divert their attention and own the day. Why is it that someone who understands the media at the level that he does, and you have to almost just step back and admire it, how good he is at it. It is a form of genius. Why is it that he is unable to see that the best way to deflect attention from Russia is to go out and get a tax cut or an Obamacare repeal and replace passed?
Well,
pour your energy into that, and you will begin to suck up a lot of Washington oxygen.
You know, Brian, I've been looking for an opportunity, an opening, and you gave it to me to comment on just that, because I want to get all of you to weigh in on this. The theory that Donald Trump is what you said he was, a master at diverting attention, at planting a tweet at just the right moment to take attention away from something he doesn't want people, you know, don't look over here, look over here. I got to tell you that it is my sense, and you can all weigh in and tell me you think I'm wrong, that this is not about master manipulator. This is a guy who can't control himself and tweets at random about anything that comes into his brain. You know, it might be giving him an awful lot of credit for being smart about how he does it. Theron, Jim?
Look, Bill, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I have said for months now that Donald Trump is unhinged. And, you know, you look at this new communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, who clearly went on CNN and did an interview with Jake Tapper. And all you got from that interview was, you know, I'm friends with the president and I like his son, Donald Trump Jr. But even he at the time he couldn't even articulate the president's agenda. And so now, because I think Brian was a fan of Spicer, but Scaramucci now is going to go in and have a press conference probably this week, and poor Sarah Huckabee. And then to your point, Bill, Donald Trump will then the next morning send out a tweet that totally contradicts, totally goes in a different direction and what the White House is trying to do. So I have come to this point that I believe that Donald Trump is so upset with himself. I don't think he really wants to be president. I think he's unhappy, and he's making everyone else around him very unhappy, because that's why you see these folks resigning, folks being, you know, fired, folks not wanting to comply in the investigations. I mean, this is a very, very unhinged individual right now.
I would have to say, Bill, if this is genius, if his tweets are genius, then it is a kind of instinctual subconscious genius. I think at work here.
look, this guy.
This Albert Einstein of Twitter, Brian.
I'm not saying it's all great strategy, but I maintain what I said. This guy and no one at this table is the president. He is, and he did it by breaking every single rule that we all agree you had to follow to become president. And he broke everything. And I want to correct one minor thing that Theron said. I'm not a fan of Sean Spicer. I know Sean Spicer. He's a nice guy. But I thought he looked too defensive on television. He was obviously uncomfortable delivering the message that he had been mandated to give. And he was the wrong person for that job. But here's the thing. There's only one person who can do that job, and it's Donald Trump. No one else can speak for him. No one else is going to make him happy. He even soured on Kellyanne Conway, who he thought was this, you know, Swingali of communications for so long. And you don't see much of her anymore. So there's going to be a burn rate with anybody speaking on his behalf.
So let me just read a couple of the other tweets before we move on, because we want to talk about Jared Kushner and his testimony this morning at the Senate Intelligence Committee. But as long as we're talking about it, a couple hours ago, he tweeted, "Sleazy Adam Schiff, the totally biased congressman looking into Russia, spends all his time on television pushing the Dem loss excuse." Adam Schiff, of course, the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. But the one that I found most interesting, and this is the one that he tweeted last night, "It's very sad that Republicans, even some that were carried over the line on my back, do very little to protect their president." You know, Jim, we're expecting there's going to be a health care vote this week if Majority Leader McConnell can pull it all together. The president's looking for as much support as he can get. This does not sound like the kind of message. It comes from the Albert Einstein of Twitter, the genius of Twitter, looking to rally the troops.
No, and especially when you consider that I'm trying to, Brian, Theron, maybe you can help me. I'm trying to think of one statewide Republican who ran behind Donald Trump. I mean, he took 51% of Georgia. Isaacson took 55%.
I think Isaacson was probably the only other person running statewide in that election cycle. But as far as what they got in previous cycles, Nathan Deal got 53%, David Perdue got 53%. So running close to 3 points ahead of where Trump was in the state.
You know, the thing about him, you know, we won't even get onto the sleazy comment. I mean, that's just what it is. It's just very unpresidential. But to now want to cry and whine about Republicans not coming to his defense and trying to help him. And the thing that I think is so interesting, you know, during this time, one of the things that we did very well with President Obama's campaign is that whenever in crisis or ever needed to get support for an issue, we would send him out and we would actually let him face the American people, put him in some battleground states, maybe some friendly states. But he would articulate his vision for Obamacare. He would talk about how he wants to save the auto industry. What's so interesting to me is that this president, who is this orator, this master manipulator, and communicating directly with his base through his Twitter account, why hasn't he gone out and had a very presidential speech that really outlines what he wants to do around healthcare, this whole infrastructure plan that we keep hearing about every single week, and in all these jobs that he's creating? I think that in lies the problem where Republicans now don't really feel that they can latch on to him because he is just so unpredictable right now.
Yeah, there's not enough substance in other
words.
There's
no substance. Because to Brian's point, I agree with Brian, is that if President Obama or any other president, even George Bush, I mean, one of the things that Karl Rove did very well is that he would, of course, write the speech for President Bush and tell him how to say it and what, you know, manner to say it. But President Bush was a good person of going, face the camera and really articulate. Whether you agree with him or not, you had to expect his passion and ability to convey his message.
I got
to
jump in because we have to get a break out of the way. When we come back, Jared Kushner did go before the Senate Intelligence Committee this morning behind closed doors. When he came out, when he got back to the White House, he issued a brief statement in front of the cameras. We're going to listen to a little bit of that and discuss what we think of the way Kushner handled what we heard of him when we come back.
Christopher Kimball is bringing his new show, Milk Street Live, to the First Center in Atlanta, September 20th. He'll reveal cooking secrets from around the world, offer taste tests, and invite audience members to join in an onstage cooking contest. Support GPB now, and you'll receive two orchestra-level tickets to the show. Attend an exclusive pre-show meet and greet with Christopher Kimball, and receive his newest book, Milk Street, The New Home Cooking. Go to gpb.org/milkstreet. That's gpb.org/milkstreet. And thanks.
Jim Galloway, Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson in the studio for Political Rewind this afternoon. We've all been waiting. I think everybody's been waiting to hear how people like Jared Kushner, Don Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, all of them were expected to have some interaction this week with the Senate or House and House, in some cases, intelligence committees. Don Jr. and Paul Manafort have now been put on hold, and we're going to pick up on that at some other point. But Jared Kushner did, in fact, go up to the Hill this morning. He testified behind closed doors. He came back to the White House, and there was an opportunity for him set up by the White House. We'll talk about why we know that it was staged by the White House in a minute. But let's just listen to a pretty significant portion of what he said in front of the cameras.
Let me be very clear. I did not collude with Russia, nor do I know of anyone else in the campaign who did so. I had no improper contacts. I have not relied on Russian funds for my businesses, and I have been fully transparent in providing all requested information. Donald Trump had a better message and ran a smarter campaign, and that is why he won. Suggesting otherwise ridicules those who voted for him.
So what's interesting about that, Jim Galloway, is this notion that he said Trump ran a better campaign. That's why he won. Picking up on his father-in-law's argument about all this, no one has ever suggested that collusion was necessarily about winning the election. It was about getting help in your efforts to win the election if there was collusion. And yet this statement insists on putting those two things together.
Right, right. This is the straw man. But I found more enlightening than that interview, that the kind of his statement that he said, which sounded a little bit stilted, was the 11-page explanation that he gave before he walked in to meet with members of Congress. And that in that statement, you could just hear the squealing tires on the Greyhound bus. Because
threw his brother-in-law under that bus.
I don't know what Donald Trump Jr. is doing. I just walked in late on him in a meeting. I left early. I had my aide summon me, so I didn't have to. I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Yeah, he said, you're right. He said, Theron and Brian, he said, you know, I'm not used to the fast pace of a campaign. Speaking of the meetings he had. He acknowledges four meetings with Russians, a couple of them before the election, a couple in the transition period. You know, the pace is so fast, I wasn't used to it. I got 200 emails a day, which, by the way, doesn't strike me as an awful lot of emails if you're a high-placed advisor to the President of the United States. So you understand that it's not easy for me to keep track of this sort of thing. But Don Jr., he knew what he was doing when he had that meeting with the Russians.
No, he didn't say that, but he implied that.
He winked it.
here's the thing, and Brian and I, we've talked about this. If I'm on a campaign and there is an opponent, my opponent, and a person has information about my opponent, it is probably likely that either myself or someone on the team may at least listen to what they have to say. But if that person is a Russian lawyer or has any affiliation with a foe of the United States of America who is a hostile government who is trying to harm Americans, You just don't take that meeting. And so to your point, Bill, to meet with them once, twice before the campaign, and then to meet with them again during the campaign, and then to also have contact with them after the campaign, and your chairman of the campaign actually had to resign because of his relationships with the Russians, and General Flynn, who lied, who say he didn't have any contact with Russia. I mean, this is just bad. And so I think what Jared Kushner showed today, his statement was very prepared. I mean, he definitely read it, I think, verbatim, and the way he sounded on the clip you just played. But this is bad. And I think ultimately this is going to always post a dark cloud over this Trump administration.
Brian, let me get your take. One of the other paragraphs from his the prepared statement, which the Washington Post released before Kushner got up to the Hill. I arrived at the meeting a little late. When I got there, the person who has since been identified as a Russian attorney was talking about the issue of a ban on U.S. adoptions of Russian children. Which is backward. It's a ban of Russian children from being adopted by U.S. families. But in any case, I had no idea why the topic was being raised and quickly determined that my time was not well spent at this meeting, which is the point at which he said he texted his assistant and said, send me something to get me out of this meeting. Call me or send me an email so I can get out of here. Brian, I give him credit for this. He got up, made a statement in public. We finally heard from this elusive character so that our imaginations can no longer run wild about who this guy is.
No, my imagination is running wilder because I want to know why he sounds like a robot on that audio. I mean,
that's just an audio issue.
Yeah, we finally hear his mysterious voice. And I tell you, these meetings, I think they're telling the truth about what they were. I thought one thing that was persuasive in his argument was that during the transition, they had gotten a congratulations from President Putin, and Kushner had to like ask who the Russian ambassador was because they didn't have a relationship. He didn't know the name of the person. That's persuasive to me. In fact, I don't think that any of this stuff is a roaring fire of scandal for the administration. The problem is they have not told the truth about it for a year and have denied in explosive terms, call it despicable, that to suggest that they had these meetings that, in fact, they did have. It makes you think they thought all of this would stay covered up, that these records would never come out, that these meetings would never come to light. And I just shake my head because at heart, their message is accurate. There's nothing here. Okay, well, then why do you make it look like something is here by lying about
it? So Kushner is back on the Hill tomorrow, Jim, in front of the House Intelligence Committee. Again, it's going to be a closed-door session, and we will wait. Oh, the reason I said that it was interesting the way they set this up is, we are all used to seeing people being grabbed at the right outside the visitor's entrance to the White House on the drive there where reporters and camera crews set up their microphones. But this time they had a podium with the White House seal on it. So this was a very well-planned event.
Well, he was a White House employee.
Yeah, exactly.
Unpaid, but still an employee.
So he'll be back on the Hill tomorrow, and we're waiting to hear how they're going to deal with Manafort and Donald Trump Jr. Apparently there are some negotiations underway. Will they testify publicly? Will they be under oath? Whatever. That's to be determined.
Right. In addition, there's a very long list of supporting documents requested from both of them.
Exactly. Let's move on to another issue that's up there on the Hill. We already mentioned it once. Jim, I frankly, because there's been so much news about Kushner, about the president's tweets throughout the day today, lost in the shuffle today has been, to the best of my knowledge, any news about what Mitch McConnell plans to do, perhaps as early as tomorrow, to call for a motion to put the health care bill on the floor for debate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you had Susan Collins on TV on Sunday on the news show saying she doesn't know what's in the bill. How can she approve a motion to proceed, which is what we're talking about, if she doesn't know what's in the bill? And that's the problem all the way around. I thought it was really interesting that, a lot of this hinges on John McCain and whether he can make it back to D.C. anytime soon. And you talk about using Twitter. He tweeted out that he's going to let himself be guided by Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, which I think is really interesting because you see governors taking more and more and more of a stand on this bill.
Yeah. Theron, you know, probably for good reason, Nancy Pelosi back during the Obamacare fight said we won't know what's in this bill until we vote on it. And she probably deserved the kind of mocking that she took as a result of that. Here you have a similar situation where senators are going to be asked perhaps tomorrow to vote to put this bill on the floor without having any idea what the heck bill they might eventually debate. Now, in their to say something positive about them, McConnell, it's perfectly fine to want to get to the floor so you can debate and call for amendments, yeah?
Well, that's exactly what a lot of the U.S. senators, and particularly the Republican leadership in the Senate, spent the entire weekend trying to figure out, can we get a vote to actually put the bill in a position where we can debate it? But here's the difference between what President Obama was doing to pass Obamacare versus what President Trump is doing. And you're right. I knew Brian had that in his deck of cards to pull out on me because she did go on the record for saying that back during the Obamacare debate, because there were times, particularly in the House, where a lot of members didn't know what was in the bill. They didn't know what they were actually going to be voting on. But the difference is that you had a popular president at the time who was before the midterms or coming off the midterms, more popular than this president, actually being that advocate and going out there. The problem here is that you have Republicans, particularly in the Senate, who have just basically shut down and said, we're not voting on this bill, even if we know what's in it, because they don't really support it. But this president has not really done what President Obama did, which is try to go over and figure out some type of compromise, figure out where he can meet some of the people that have some heartburn about this bill. Now, I do believe that I've heard from a couple senators, chief of staffs, that are actually in the Hill right now on the Republican side, as of like an hour ago before I came on this radio show, that don't even know if they're going to vote on it, don't know what's in the bill. I mean, they haven't even been briefed. And so I think we should really be prepared to, you know, see some fireworks tomorrow.
Brian, our own Senator David Perdue has led that battle to get the Senate to stay in session for two additional weeks in August to not take their summer recess until mid-August, and McConnell agreed to it. And now you've got to wonder whether or not that's going to come back and bite them in the rear end, because if they don't get anything done, even with an extended summer session, they are really going to be facing trouble with their own voters back home.
Well, you know, if they don't move the ball forward this week, what will they have to do on health care?
Well, that's right. They probably won't even take – they'll probably go ahead and take their break is what you're saying.
Possibly. Yeah. But how do you walk that back now?
Yeah.
How do you possibly do that? You would be putting a lot of pressure on the Purdue communications operation to explain that one away when he's taken a national stand. This has not been local media that he's done on this. I mean, he took a national stand to get this done. This goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show. Every Republican in Washington needs to be focused single-mindedly with laser focus on getting a health care replacement.
Why?
Because we campaigned on it for 7 years, because Obamacare is failing, because despite what the president says, if we have a problem at this juncture, the people in control will get blamed for it. Our prediction.
And because it's not about Russia.
And because it's not about Russia, yeah. I mean, there's that. Yeah, exactly. There's that too. As a residual benefit, and I think a lot of Americans don't care about Russia, but they do care about how much they're paying in premiums. They do care about their deductibles. They do care about being able to pick their own doctor, which Obama took away from them. So there are a lot of areas where we can make things better for American families. Let's go do those things. How about that?
But what you're doing, we could be doing as early as tomorrow is we could be putting on the Senate agenda a bill that will affect 1/5 of the economy, and we don't know what it is. You know how the first rule of in courtroom lawyering is you never ask a question that you don't know what the answer to is? We don't know what the answer to this bill is. We have no idea. This is going to be done on the fly. You're going to be having the nation's healthcare economy done on the fly here.
So there's a report over the weekend that I think it was the Wall Street Journal who had this, that yesterday down in Plains before the church service in his Sunday school lesson, President Carter said he is convinced that we will be moving at some period in the future to a universal health care plan, Medicare for all. And Democrats, Theron Johnson, in the Senate are unveiling an agenda that Chuck Schumer started talking about this weekend. He was tough on Hillary Clinton the last few days. He
said
she can't blame Russia. She cannot blame anybody but herself for not putting forth a series of proposals that people would want. And Schumer said, we may go for universal health care if we get the chance.
Well, look, you know, Senator Schumer basically also said, I read this morning, where he basically said that the problem with Democrats are Democrats, that we've got to start telling Americans what we are for. And that's why they're coming forward with this jobs program. And so, look, I think Senator Schumer is in a position to say what a lot of Democrats are saying. I mean, look, I'm not going to come on the show and sugarcoat it. There's a tremendous divide in our party nationally right now who believe what Chuck Schumer is saying, and saying, listen, we may need to take a strong look at the leadership in our party on a national level and may make some changes. But then there's also another sector of the party that is saying we failed to win the election because love or hate Donald Trump, whether he manipulated the election through his tweets or if he had Russian help, he definitely ran a very strategic campaign that was focused on telling the American people what he was for.
All right, we've got to take another break, but we've got some tweets that we'd love to talk to you about. You tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Sam Burnham tweets, I'd be more willing to accept Trump's tweets as genius if they distracted negative attention from progress on policy. Matt Schweitzer says Trump isn't a master of anything. He bluffed his way into the White House. Take the art of the deal. As an example, interviews with the ghostwriter who wrote it, essentially, is saying you find out he was pulling his hair out just trying to get Trump to focus long. We've got a few more, so share with us your tweets at PoliticsGPB. All right, let's get another break out of the way. David Ralston, the Speaker of the Georgia House, has an interesting new approach to looking at the state of health in Lisa?
Never mind, sorry.
This is the way it works. Look at this. They used to walk in the middle of the show, and Lisa Clark.
The only thing she doesn't have is a sheet of paper that says bulletin.
Yeah.
Bulletin.
I'll tell you what. We'll find out what Lisa Clark wanted to tell us after the break.
On the next Fresh Air, the frozen vault in the Arctic, where 933,000 samples of crop varieties are preserved. We talk with Carrie Fowler about creating the global seed vault where the world's biodiversity is protected in the event of climate extremes, pests, or war. His book is called Seeds on Ice. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Jim Galloway, Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson, would one of you like to tell our listeners why Lisa Clark, she said, I thought you were already in the break. Why did she come in
but
and interrupt?
It was truly important.
What was she here?
This is National Tequila Day, which explains so much.
Yeah, drinks on you after this, Brian.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Tequila shots.
God. Build the wall.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. I really apologize. We try to be much more serious here on this show. Jim, Speaker Ralston did an interesting thing the other day. He's appointed a committee to look at the state of health and health care in Georgia. Clearly not a completely separate deal from what's going on in Washington.
No. And it's very broadly defined. It's got good people on it. It's not a pro forma thing, and I think what you're seeing is a state that's trying to get ready, trying to get ahead of the curve this time, for a post Obamacare situation. We don't know what it's going to look like. But as we've said here before, the state of Georgia is very intent on getting its fair share. This division between expanded Medicaid recipients and non-expanded, that is really truly hurting the state right now, and they want to get rid of that difference.
He's also empowering them to look at the chronic diseases and illnesses that Georgians have and how they're getting access to the health care they need to take care of those
things. And I'll tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me if they get into the issue of the lack of internet access here, because that's a key to addressing
telemedicine.
Healthcare. Yes, exactly. That is going to be the only way that South Georgia can afford to keep up reasonable health care.
Look at what Speaker Ralston is doing across the board. And let me put it in a little bit of context for you. He's looking at health care with this, which is a major issue for not only rural areas but also urban areas because of hospitals like Grady and Memorial and Savannah. He's looking at rural issues with a rural task force because we're losing population. And as Georgia's economy is booming, many parts of our state are being left behind from that growth. He's looking at that. And he's looking at stuff that maybe Republicans weren't leading on in the past. He's got a panel looking at transit options. And he is saying, hey, it's probably about time that the state of Georgia step up and, like every other jurisdiction in the country, have the state pay for a portion of transit.
Theron, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? And you were just so young when Thomas B. Murphy was Speaker. Jim and I remember him fondly. This was a guy, a rural Georgian like Ralston, although Ralston's up there from a fairly sophisticated part of North Georgia, Blue Ridge. Nevertheless, basically a rural Georgian with progressive ideas that he's willing to bring to the table. That doesn't mean everything he does is progressive, but Brian just listed a few of the things that really make him out to be a guy who has the genuine best interests of the state at heart.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at transit, now let's give Senator Brandon Beach a little credit here, too.
Absolutely.
Because he listens to all these shows. If I don't give him a shout out, he'll be texting me saying to stop giving. But, you know, look, he and the Speaker, but also Beach got beat up. But look, what Speaker Ralston is doing around transit is unparalleled. I mean, that is something that he's really going to really put his, you know, stake in the ground on that. But also this recent health care. And Brian and I have debated this a lot. I mean, one of the surprises I thought Lisa was going to come and tell us is that the governor finally decided to expand Medicaid in Georgia. I mean, I would have probably jumped
well,
out of my
he
chair.
Was. He had just had a shot of tequila.
Lost track of time.
But I got to give Republicans a little credit here in Georgia. Let's just kind of really dissect this health care sort of trajectory that we're on. I mean, when President Trump was surprisingly elected in November, because a lot of Republicans in Georgia thought Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president of the United States, they immediately started saying, you know what, let's pause. Let's let Secretary Price become confirmed as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Let's pause for a second and look at what we're going to really deal with health care. Well, now 6 months in this Trump administration has gone by, and there has been no repeal, no replace. Now we're talking about just repealing. So what he's doing is preparing for the worst. He is basically saying if this doesn't work out in Washington, if Washington cannot do their job and basically making sure that Americans have access to affordable health care, then we as Georgians have got to work in a bipartisan way to come up with some state solutions.
And he's doing it in the context of a 2018 gubernatorial election.
Absolutely.
He is not running himself, but he is setting the table.
That's right. And I think that is very important. That's the context that I was going to mention, Jim. I'm glad you brought that up. David Ralston is in a unique position, and he is very aware of that at this moment. In 2019, no matter what, we're going to have a new governor. We're going to have a new lieutenant governor. We're going to have a new insurance commissioner who could play a role in some of this health care stuff that we're discussing. And there's going to be a tremendous amount of turnover in chairmanships and in rank and file members of the House and Senate on the state level. David Ralston is going to be the consistent factor. He's going to be the guy who's still standing in the same position. He is aware of his importance in the state at this juncture, and he is talking about the things that really matter, the good governance issues. Now, the statewide candidates are going to be very important, and luckily, we've got some candidates who take these issues very seriously. But in a Republican primary, just like in a Democrat primary, you have to play to what those voters care about and show that you share their values. So what that does is it keeps us from talking about the bread and butter issues. You go to red meat. You do it on both sides. So this isn't a Republican shortcoming. Both sides do this. But David Ralston, not having a primary next year, is able to stay above that and talk about these good governance issues. I mean, thank God we've got him there.
Listen, I think what Brian just did is it is actually laid out a possible campaign for David Ralston. I mean, look at what Speaker Ralston is doing. I mean, nothing against the other people who are running, but he is basically taking leadership on three of the main issues that Georgians care deeply about. And so I honestly think until he takes it off the table, I don't know if he's come out and said that he has no aspirations at all to pursue statewide office, but let's not rule this guy out. I mean, I kind of want to dibble and dabble and start a little controversy on the Republican primary side here, but I think if Speaker Ralston actually wanted to run for governor, and looking what he's done and displayed this leadership by these 3 to 4 to 5 main issues that he's been a champion on, I think he could do very well in that primary.
I'm trying to remember back in 2010, we had a May of 2010, we had a full field, Republican field of gubernatorial candidates, and one new candidate jumped in. Did he not? Was that May or what? When was that?
You've got me.
That wasn't Nathan Deal.
We'll figure it out.
No, Nathan Deal. No, Nathan Deal.
Nathan Deal.
He got in the summer of 2009.
Yeah. All right. Misremembering.
Yeah. Okay, let me move on. By the way, Catherine Cummings has just tweeted to us a photograph of a margarita saying, "Thank you for making Monday better." And she's got the hashtag National Tequila Day. Lisa Clark, you've really started something here. Jim Galloway, speaking of the governor's race, you all had a nice item in the Political Insider this morning, an endorsement for Stacey Abrams, Democratic candidate for governor.
From John Lewis. He joins Hank Johnson. They're both backing Stacey Abrams. Stacey Evans of Smyrna is the other candidate. And I find this is a fairly early endorsement by Lewis, because we talked to him just a couple of weeks ago and he said he was still trying to stay out of this one. To me, it kind of harkens back to the 2008 presidential race.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
And when Lewis was on the side of Hillary Clinton,
he jumped in early for Hillary Clinton.
Barack Obama took off, and man, his district nailed him on it, and he had to switch. He switched to Obama.
Theron, why did John Lewis jump in so quickly, do you imagine?
Well, first of all, Congressman Lewis is his own man, you know, and I think that you're right, Jim. He did say a week ago that he was going to stay out of the race. But I would tell you, I think I was there in 2007 when you had people like Gordon Giffen and others really putting a tremendous amount of pressure on Congressman Lewis. Bill Clinton was calling him every single day at home, talking to Mrs. Lewis, and he came out and went over Pascal's and endorsed Hillary Clinton. I remember that vividly.
I was there.
Yeah, and so I think in this case, you know, I'm going to be fair. I think that Leader Abrams has been fostering a working relationship with Congressman Lewis now for a long time. I mean, let's just face it. She's been preparing to run for governor for a few years now. And I think that what happened is that she knew that she had to really add some legitimacy to her campaign for governor, because one of the things that I think that she knew that she's going to struggle with is making sure that she can articulate a message to the African-American community that will ultimately turn into votes for
her. All right. I want to move on. Obviously, there's a lot of time to look at the governor's race. Thought Crime tweets, can we get some updates on Atlanta mayoral race? Great show. Thank you, Thought Crime. We will. We'll start really digging into the Atlanta mayor's race at some point. And when we do, I want to make sure that we point out that why this is a race that the rest of the state has good reason, because we are all over the state of Georgia. But you're right, Thought Crime, we need to start getting into that race. It's really interesting, Jim.
It is. I mean, it's right now it's got the kind of the dimensions you would expect. Mary Norwood is pulled well ahead at something like 20%, and everybody else is further behind. Nobody's got a clear majority yet. I mean, a clear path to a majority yet, I don't think.
If I may add, though, in 8 years ago, and I went back and looked at the numbers, when I was running Mayor Reed's campaign.
Yeah, he was pulling about 6%.
Yeah, we were at actually about 7.6.
Yeah, I think that's
and I rounded it off to 8 when I would talk to you, Jim.
Thank you for reminding us of that, Theron.
But here's the difference, real quick, for your Thought Crime, which I think is a very interesting Twitter handle. I mean, that's better than Lawrence Tinsdale.
Nothing's better than Lawrence Tinsdale.
That's, but for those of you who don't know, that's Brian Robinson.
Yeah. So tweet your hate at Lord Tinsdale.
But the one thing I will say is this. The difference about this race and to like the next mayor of Atlanta, is that Kasim Reed really only had one person to go after and try to go on to run against Mayor Norwood in the runoff. Now, if you're in this race, you probably have 4 to 5 other candidates that you've got to beat for that second place. So I think that's the big difference.
All right. Well, we will start paying attention to that.
I want to know,
real
though,
quick.
I want to know why we're not hearing more about this in the media. I'm not seeing it on TV. I'm not seeing it much covered. Grant, we have a decimated, Jim and Greg Bluestein are basically the core of Atlanta.
I will tell you, I think it is a very unformed race right now. It is with the one thing you point to is Mary Norwood does seem to be the front runner. She's raising a lot of money, but it's a very unformed race with an awful lot of candidates, Jim Galloway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the major issues haven't been brought up
right,
yet.
Right. We're waiting on it. So all right. Well, we'll get into that. But thank you for that question, Brian. Well, let's have a little fun before we have to get out of here. It's Monday afternoon. We got a whole week of work ahead of us. And so we thought we'd share with you some of the more humorous sides of what's been going on in Washington. There's a guy on YouTube who many of you may follow. He calls himself Rodney Rainbow. He does a lot of YouTube videos that are not very good, but he does some every now and then that are really funny. Lisa Clark called our attention to this one, which is his comment on the Don Trump Jr. meeting with the Russians. And for those of you who are fans of Hamilton, you'll get a particular kick out of this.
Donald claims.
Someone sent me an email.
A publicist named Goldstone, a friend of the family.
Donald claims
that he might have made a boo-boo.
In retrospect, I probably would have done things a little differently.
Donald claims.
Jared Kushner dropped by but got bored pretty quick and then he dipped out quietly.
Donald claims.
So before you change your tune, you're saying there's the lady, Slim Shady and Junior, but someone else was in the room where it happened. Room where it happened. Room where it happened. Lots of Russians in the room where it happened.
The room where it happened.
The room where it happened. A Russian lobbyist, a translator, and Paul. No one really knows why they met with them at all. But this buffoon let it happen. With lots of people in the room where it happened.
Lisa Clark, can we post that on the blog, the link to it on the blog, so people can listen to watch the whole thing? And then, before we leave you today, we thought that we should share with you a very funny mashup that the Daily Show did, saying a fond farewell to the man we've already mentioned today, Sean Spicer. Let's listen.
Guys, good morning, good afternoon.
Good evening,
good afternoon.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
You're shaking your head. I appreciate it, but with respect to over the... Second.
You don't get to just yell out questions. We're going to raise our hand like big boys and girls.
Denmark as a education point. Points.
Bashar al-Assad. I know you've mispronounced his name a few times.
Hitler, who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
As many of you know.
Hey, Jonathan, somebody's asking a question. It's not your press briefing.
Major,
I will let the tweet speak for itself.
I'm going to let the tweet speak for itself.
His tweets speak for themselves.
His tweets do speak for themselves.
I mean, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard. Okay, this is silly. Okay, next, stop shaking your head again.
Jim, Brian Robinson has actually had to play that role, so I think we should ask him.
Let it be known that Theron Johnson just put a box of Kleenex in front of Brian Robinson just to catch the tears.
Brian, look, it is never easy to be the media spokesperson for a governor or president of the United States. We have fun with Sean Spicer. But he was in he was just in an impossible position from the start, wasn't he?
He never really had a chance. And it is a hard job because you've got to be an expert on a million things on day one. And you're going to get blindsided every day with some issue that you've never heard of that you have to become an expert on by the end of that news cycle. And that's in the best of times. In the worst of times, you are sent out there with talking points and a message that's been agreed upon in meetings in the morning, and then the next day, the president tweets out something completely contradictory that you then have to go out and explain the contradiction the next day. It's impossible. He was also given talking points that you could see on Sean's face he disagreed with, that he thought were false, whether this were the 5 million, 3 to 5 million illegal votes, whether it was the largest crowd at an inauguration. I mean, you don't get that angry talking about crowd size unless you are really uncomfortable talking about what you're talking about.
Jim?
Yeah, I'll miss him. I think I'll miss Melissa McCarthy more. But, you know, to Brian's point, you had a guy in Sean Spicer who may have repeated some falsehoods, but he was clearly uncomfortable when he did it.
Yes.
You now have this guy Scaramucci, the Mooch.
The Mooch.
And he doesn't look like he'd be that uncomfortable in saying things that aren't necessarily true.
But maybe point out, this guy is pro-gun control. I think it's also showed he had to delete some tweets where he's actually, very aligned. He's pro-climate change. And so he is
pro-choice.
I mean, Brian knows goodness. And so, again, this gentleman was on CNN this weekend. I think the only thing that was clear to your point, Jim, is that he feels that he has the relationship with Donald Trump. They're friends. I mean, he said Donald Trump called him from Air Force One to tell him that there was still a lot of misinformation out there about this Russian investigation. I think you're going to see a difference in the delivery. But at the end of the day, if Trump continues to contradict his staff and his press secretaries, you're going to see the same problem.
Yeah, we'll
and
watch another, that unfold.
And another problem very quickly is Scaramucci on TV this weekend also sent contradictory messages to what Sarah Sanders was saying on other television stations.
Yeah, it might not
That's
have been
got
the,
to stop.
Yeah, it might not have been the smartest thing for him a day yeah. after getting the job to go
quite
expose
frankly,
himself.
I think he's going to be chief of staff pretty quick, so he wouldn't be doing
wow.
that anyway.
All right. Could we'll be. Watch that. We'll watch how that unfolds. All right, we're just about out of time. I want to just quickly tell you a little bit about what's coming up on Wednesday. Heath Garrett. Our good friend Heath Garrett, Republican strategist, close advisor to Johnny Isaacson, will be here, along with Dr. Andra Gillespie from Emory University. We'll see what happens by then in terms of Jared Kushner and the rest of the Russia investigation. Of course, we'll talk about local politics as well. And then Friday on this show, John Watson, the new chairman of the Georgia Republican Party, will be in. Jim, it'll be fascinating to talk to him about what his plans are, among other things, to raise some money for the Republican Party of Georgia.
Right, and we'll have him outline to the extent that he will the coming gubernatorial race.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then on Thursday, on Two-Way Street, Thursday at 2, I'll be talking with novelist Richard Russo, Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist. Nobody's Fool, Empire Falls, which won the Pulitzer Prize. Paul Newman starred in 3 pictures that were made from Russo novels. He's got a brand new book out now, and one of the stories in the book is a love letter to Paul Newman, and Richard Russo tells a very sweet and kind of heartbreaking story about working with Paul Newman as Newman was coming close to the end of his life. So that's Thursday on Two-Way Street at 2 o'clock. That's it for us. Thanks, everybody in the control room for a great show today. Jenny and Tyler and Olivia and Lisa. We'll be back with you on Wednesday at 2.